Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning, I'm Chris Farrell, in for Kerry Miller. Among the most disputed and emotional catchphrases in regulation is net neutrality. Now, who knew that a regulation could just evoke so much emotion? But what does net neutrality mean? Now, you know, if I boil it down, it's the principle that internet service providers have to treat all data online equally. They can't discriminate based on how much you pay for the service. In just a few weeks, the Federal Communications Commission will vote to eliminate net neutrality. And this move has struck a nerve. A New York Times columnist writes in response, "The internet is dying." The Wall Street Journal editorial page claims the American consumer, and I quote, will benefit from more innovation and choice online. So what's going on? To clarify the stakes, I'm joined by Nate Foster. He's an associate professor of computer science at Cornell University. Welcome, Nate.
Hi, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
And I just also have a note of disclosure. In addition to Nate's position at Cornell, he's also employed as a consultant at Barefoot Networks. Barefoot makes hardware chips for high-speed routers. Now, while Barefoot doesn't have a direct stake in the net neutrality debate, some of its customers certainly do. So that's just disclosure out there. Now, I really want to get your questions about net neutrality. What do you think is right or wrong about net neutrality? Call us at 651-227-6000, toll-free 800-242-2828, and online you can tweet me at cfarrellecon. All right, Nate, I'm going to start out with just the really basic question so we can just sort of frame this conversation. What is net neutrality?
So I think you already sort of described the basics. It's the principle that when people connect to the internet, they should get the same service regardless of who they're connecting to and what kind of content they're transmitting. So whether they're downloading videos or shopping, you know, on Etsy or Amazon or just reading email, with net neutrality, their internet service provider or ISP has to give them the same service, and their ISP can't block connections or throttle their data rates based on content.
Okay, so we'll stay with the net neutrality world. Who benefits from that regulatory structure?
So I think, you know, on the side of that is in favor of this kind of strong form of net neutrality, I think, you know, customers or consumers are an obvious beneficiary, as well as there's a number of advocacy groups that sort of nurture the internet ecosystem and like to see the sort of structure and culture of the internet promoted. And then you also see lots of startups that over the years have benefited from having this kind of open internet. If you have something like net neutrality, then, you know, a new startup that has some new service can basically connect to the internet and get the same kind of service to their customers as the existing big players.
Okay, so now, what is the argument against a net neutrality structure?
So I think, you know, on the side of the ISPs and telecommunications
and an ISP companies,
is an internet service provider.
Okay.
This, and I should say quickly that there's quite a range of ISPs. You have in many small cities, you have, you know, really small companies that are providing internet service. You have some cities that have themselves set up municipal services, and then you also have really big companies like AT&T and Verizon that are themselves ISPs.
Okay.
So especially on the larger side of things, I think for obvious reasons, you know, ISPs would prefer to be free of regulations. They'd prefer to sort of be able to conduct their business however they'd like.
Okay, so does this mean that, so let's say we got rid of net neutrality and that's no longer the regulatory structure. Does the internet become more like my cable TV service?
I think that's the concern. You know, right now, under the current principles that have been developed by the FCC over the last decade or so, ISPs are not able to discriminate or filter based on content. There are some carve-outs so that they can sort of run a good service, but in general, they can't sort of, you know, set up similar to cable TV, you know, one level of service for video and one level of service for music and one level of service for Skype or phone calls, the only thing they really can discriminate on is sort of how fast can you send data? You know, do you have DSL or do you have, you know, very fast, maybe gigabit internet? And how much data can you send?
Yeah, because as a consumer, I think this is one of the parts that always puzzles me. As a consumer, I love the internet. I love exploring the internet. I'm a journalist, and like a lot of people, I kind of, you know, live off the internet. And cable TV, there's like three channels I want, four channels I want. Why can't I just get the four channels that I want, but I have to get 130 or whatever the number is? I can't remember which package I have. But I feel like in one market I have choice, and in another market I have very limited choice.
Yeah, so I think for consumers, I mean, maybe the top, there's many reasons that net neutrality is attractive, but maybe the top two are sort of functionality and then sort of the pricing structure. So I think for functionality, you know, whenever some exciting new internet service comes out, it's wonderful that right now you can just sort of access it immediately. You know, Netflix, Spotify, YouTube, these things didn't exist 10 years ago.
Right.
Not in their current form. And we didn't have to do something special to start using them. We could just start using them if you had internet service. And so that's something that I think consumers like to keep, especially because the tech sector moves so fast. And then the second thing is pricing. I think, you know, the FCC hasn't really done very much in this so far, but under the current rules, you know, the way that you sort of buy internet service is relatively simple. You kind of pay this flat rate. You might pay premium for a faster rate or for more data, but you don't pay different kinds of rate for different kinds of content. Compared to, you know, say what it's like to negotiate with a cable company for your cable bill, that's a much more attractive setup for consumers.
So what questions do you have for Nate on net neutrality? Do you think it's just good that the government's going to take a lighter regulatory approach? Or do you feel that, you know, this is a step in the wrong direction? Give us a call at 651-227-6000, toll free 800-242-2828. And let's go to Stillwater. And Ron, what is your insight on this, Ron?
Well, I'm looking at it from the other point of view. Well, first of all, I want to make a comment. Most people get their internet through their cable companies. The other thing is, looking at it from the other point of view, what about the provider? Are they going to start charging different rates for providers based on how much traffic they get or, you know, their content?
Okay. So, Nate, let's take the second question first.
So could you expand on what you mean by provider? That's a term of art in the industry, so I'm not quite sure I understand the question.
Say like I'm a blog writer and I have a blog. Okay, I'm a small provider that maybe has 1,000 subscribers. You know, so is the distributor, you know, like Comcast, are they going to slow down all content from my blog because I'm not big enough for them?
So I think that's one of the concerns, is that if the current regulations were rolled back, as proposed by the FCC chairman, Pai, that ISPs would be free to create what some people are calling fast lanes, so that, you know, a really big content provider, say like Google or Facebook, would be able to negotiate so that their content, you know, gets to customers quickly and maybe they have to pay less for it. And that the small players, you know, maybe it's your blog sitting on some server somewhere on the internet, if it hasn't negotiated this special arrangement with the ISP, then it might get a slower rate and the whole experience might be degraded because of that.
Okay. Nate, would this, on the first part of his observation, would this whole conversation be moot, or would the conversation be different if I live in St. Paul and, you know, really have a choice of one, maybe two providers in terms of my internet connection? But if I had a choice of 5, 6, 7, 8 different providers competing for my business and my internet connection business, would that affect the dynamics of this discussion?
Yeah, I think so. You know, like in many industries, there's been a lot of consolidation in the networking industry. And there are certain situations where the content provider and the so-called backbone service provider that really carries traffic at the core of the internet, as well as the consumer-facing ISP, are all the same. So, you know, companies like AT&T maybe fit this bill. And as you can see, as you continue to see sort of proposed mergers between these large companies, there may even be fewer sort of different parties in play. And so I think it is, you know, a vastly different world if you're living in a place where, you know, there's a number of ISPs and you can pick and choose and there's competition between them to provide the best service, than the sort of, you know, free market kinds of principles that the current administration is sort of advocating for. It's more easy to believe that those would have good effects for consumers. But if you're in this regime where, you know, a small number of big companies sort of own the content and own all the pipes that get it to customers, it's a little less easy to believe.
Well, let's go to Eden Prairie, which really in this area is sort of one of the high-tech centers of our community. And Al?
Good morning. Thanks for the great conversation. First, I'll say that I'm a proponent of net neutrality. But I have a kind of a big concern. Yep. I understand businesses are always interested. You know, the thing you want to hear about is stability and certainty and things. Well, once we've now politicized, you know, completely politicized net neutrality, and we had 8 years of one direction, which I appreciated, and now we're moving to a different direction. And then if the next election turns to be someone else with a different idea, how can you have any certainty other than, well, we have 4 years of certainty, so let's plan ahead, guys.
Well, that's a really important question because a lot of these businesses involve, you know, the outlay of pretty substantial sums of investment in high-tech gear. Right, Nate? So this regulatory uncertainty, how do you see that affecting companies?
Yeah, I think both the uncertainty and also the sort of rapidly, you know, shifting tides sort of with every administration, that is a concern. And I think that's something that the U.S. as a whole should be concerned with, because if we change the rules every 4 years in diametrically opposed ways, it's going to be difficult for businesses to operate. One thing I would say is there has been a huge change over the last 10 years in the way that the internet is used. And really the two big drivers are, you know, smartphones came out.
Right.
And so suddenly, instead of, you know, sitting at your house and dialing up, you know, over a modem or maybe having DSL or broadband, you know, now everyone is accessing the internet over their phone all the time. And the second thing is the huge rise of audio and video and sort of rich multimedia that suddenly people are accessing over the internet. And so this has created real pressures for internet service providers, because their customers really want to be able to go, you know, on their phone anywhere in the U.S., you know, download a video immediately. And so, you know, the amount of data they have to carry has massively increased.
Right. So the amount of investment is also grown exponentially, I would imagine.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, the biggest fees spend in the tens of billions per year in capital expenditures on infrastructure, which is a sort of, to me, an astounding sum.
It is an astounding sum. And you're making that kind of investment with all this regulatory uncertainty.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's go to our neighboring state, Wisconsin. And Jeff, what's your insight or question?
Well, generally, I'm a hands-off kind of guy, but as far as the internet goes, it has become so critical to everything we do. And in rural Wisconsin, we have one provider. I don't know if you want that name on the radio or not, but we got one provider.
That's fine,
and
yeah.
Crappy service. It's 0.5. I had a modem that was 300 baud at one time, I think was faster than this. And you know, you got kids, because schools have got their textbooks online and everything, it becomes incredibly difficult to keep up with the stuff they got to do and work and business and all the rest of it. So regulation, I think, is essential if we're going to have a level playing field out here in rural Wisconsin.
Yeah, I'm really glad you raised this, because, you know, that's been one of the issues that has puzzled me. And maybe, Nate, you have some insight. It seems that there is a divide between urban and rural, and always has been around different topics. But it seems to be no reason in today's society why broadband is just not terrific in rural America today.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, one view of a very, you know, pro net neutrality and also pro sort of strong regulatory framework side of things would be to say that, you know, the internet has become sort of an essential utility for modern life.
Yeah.
And so, you know, one of the things government should do is make sure that, you know, the sort of baseline for all of the citizens is giving those essentials. And I think I like the question too, because it really gets at, you know, the key issue here, which is, do we treat internet service providers like utilities, you know, like the phone or like electricity or like gas, or do we treat it like just any other kind of company, you know, a barbershop or a car wash or a lawn service, where they can really, you know, provide whatever service they want at whatever price they want? And, you know, I think there are some compelling arguments that, you know, sort of societal benefits are served by treating it more like a utility. And part of that could mean going from the current regulatory framework to actually something stronger, where we start mandating, you know, minimum levels of service because the internet is being used for schools and, you know, medicine and so on and so forth.
Well, you know, I remember having conversations with my mom's mom, my grandmother on my mother's side, and lived in rural upstate New York, very, very poor part of upstate New York, and how their lives were transformed when electricity came out there and the telephone came out there. And we think about the telephone and people kind of dismiss it. That's an old technology. We don't want to use that kind of framework. We're thinking about something fast and gee whiz like the internet. But those technologies transform lives in a really fundamental way. And I just get the sense that in today's society, in terms of business, in terms of education, he was mentioning education, it's the same story.
Yeah, I very much think so.
So let's you know, let's go in Minneapolis. Is it Minneapolis, Lori? Is that where you're based out of?
Well, I'm actually from Park Rapids, Minnesota.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Northern Minnesota. That's okay because I'm on a cell phone, so hopefully you won't lose me. But my concern has to do with education. And my understanding of net neutrality has been that it controls the idea that in my school, we get to determine the speed, and we also get to determine the content that we allow our students to have access to. And my concern about losing net neutrality is, are we going to lose that ability to be able to have our students have access to all the credible resources that we think are important for them to have access to? Or are we going to lose the speed of delivery for that, for those materials for our students? If that's taken away.
Yeah, thank you for your question, Lori. And Nate, I just also want to read a what came in over Twitter from a professor, and it sort of just echoes her question. So I just want to bring it. It says, what's going to happen to online and hybrid education in universities? Will they be charged exorbitant rates to deliver the high-speed access to courses? And students who can't afford to pay for the speed, how can they take an online course? So I think these are both the professor and Lori are kind of really raising this critical issue about education.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you could probably do this in many different domains, but in education, you know, there's been a big push in recent years towards online courses. There's things called MOOCs, massive online courses, where really high-quality materials are being put online, often for free, and these consist largely of videos and then some kind of virtual experience, you know, interacting with maybe a professor and maybe some TAs. And I think that's the jury's still out if that's going to sort of, you know, how successful that will be. But it's a really exciting way to think about bringing, you know, really high quality educational content to students who otherwise wouldn't be able to get it. And so if you start talking about filtering or throttling internet based on content, I think it's a huge concern that that kind of content might not get to the students who want to use it.
You know, and listening to these questions and your answers, I mean, this is why net neutrality why people care about net neutrality so much. I mean, these are really high stakes when we start talking about education.
Yes.
All right, let's go to Lisa in Minneapolis. And I believe I got the Minneapolis right this time. We dropped Lisa, but I'm gonna read you her question because it came in also online. And what Lisa says, this really amounts to the new frontier of the battle over free speech. If content creators can't make money for someone, I think they'll be shut down. I mean, what about this issue about free speech, content? How much is this playing a role in the net neutrality debate?
So I'm not, I've kind of gone through a list of what you might call bad behaviors on the parts of ISPs. So you can go back over the last decade and find examples of, you know, specific ISPs that did do some form of content, a blocking based on content, or of throttling based on content. I haven't been able to find any examples where they were actually, doing some form of censorship. But there were these sort of things that indirectly could shape, you know, what content is getting to consumers. So things like there was an ISP that was basically hijacking search engine queries and then redirecting it to a service that they wanted to use. And so, you know, that's the kind of indirect control that an ISP could have that could, you know, cause consumers to see different results and have a sort of indirect form of censorship that's quite concerning.
And how big a concern or how concerned are you? You know, sometimes legends are reasonably true or pretty close to approximations. I mean, Jeff Bezos and his wife getting in their beat-up car and driving from the East Coast out to state of Washington and had his idea about starting an online bookseller, and it becomes what we all know as Amazon.com. But this notion that abandoning net neutrality favors the big, the already existing, and it will create another barrier for startups, and it's hard enough in life to start a business as it is.
Yeah, I think this is a concern. It's worth noting that already the core of the internet has, in a sense, stopped being neutral, or maybe it was never neutral. If you think about how, say, a YouTube video gets to you, that's a really amazing technical accomplishment that, you know, you can download this video, from your phone and it just works. The way that that's been done is that the really big content providers have basically set up these special private networks. They're called content delivery networks, where they essentially put their machines in the network of your ISP, so that the traffic going to that service, you know, only takes maybe one hop and has very good service. So that's already allowed. There's a sense in which, you know, if I wanted to go set up a service to compete with Netflix or YouTube today, it'd be somewhat difficult for me to do that because I'd be competing with this large private infrastructure. But in a broad sense, I think, you know, the sort of myth of the, you know, the college graduate who maybe moves to the Silicon Valley or moves to Seattle and sets up a startup. There is something amazing about the openness of the internet that they can just sort of plug in and suddenly, you know, have access to billions of users around the world.
So I think we have time for one more call. I'm looking at our producers who are saying yes. So Kevin in St. Paul, what is your question or observation?
I think you covered a bit of it when I was on with one of your screeners about treating internet access like a utility and the difference between the FCC ruling on this versus the FTC from a trade point of view.
Federal Trade Commission, FTC.
Federal Trade Commission, yep. I think the aspect of it that I was looking at was if you're going to do away with net neutrality, then I would think a repercussion of that would be to go to internet service providers or big companies like Comcast to say, you know, you would have to spin off your ISP functions because it would be a conflict of interest for you to provide internet services and provide content. So I see a bit of a parallelism there that if you're really going to support going away from net neutrality, then you would really need to look at breaking up some of these bigger companies that provide multiple paths and services.
Okay, so you're really raising the question, okay, if we go with the non-net neutrality regime, then your antitrust enforcement has to be a lot stronger. What do you think of that, Nate?
Yeah, I'm not a policy person by training, but this is one of the arguments that the administration is making, that the current FCC rules basically classify internet providers as a utility, much like the phone service. But in the absence of those, there's still other agencies that have authority to regulate based on things like antitrust law. And so you know, if you go through these list of bad behaviors I was alluding to before, where ISPs have done various forms of content-based filtering, eventually these things, for the most part, got worked out in the sense that the ISPs stopped doing that kind of blocking or throttling, and sometimes it was other agencies that were involved. So I think this is a, I mean, it's sort of a policy question, you know, which agencies should be involved with regulating and what's the sort of general approach to regulating internet service.
So I have a feeling we're going to be talking a lot about net neutrality down the year, but thank you very much. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
Nate Foster is an associate professor of computer science at Cornell University.